Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, and welcome to the number 7 in UK a gaming podcast with Scott Telford and Jules Gill.
To be honest, we can completely roll with that. I mean, looking at the statistics right now, that's our new introduction. Me and Jules Gill. I'm Scott Telford, joined by Jules Gill. Should say that's the intro. Hello, Jules Gill.
Hey, what's up? And what are we doing up, here? Man? What are we doing here?
What we're doing here is the Entitled Banter Podcast, UBP, hashtag UBP,
UBP,
which is the Entitled Banter Podcast, where every single week we ask people for their questions, their thoughts, their whatever the hell's going on in the world, and we get through as many questions as we can, which to that end, we tend to only get through five.
I was about to say,
you can count on one hand how many questions we actually answer. We raise more questions than we actually answer.
But just to quickly explain Jules's little Vox Pop thing at the start, I was having a dive on the chartable.com charts, funnily enough, and we were number 7. What Culture Gaming was number 7 on the UK chart for Spotify downloads last week. Currently we're on 15, so that does make your intro a bit of a lie, but it might come back up again. You never know.
Because people tune in not to hear our gaming takes, not to hear our personal thoughts on the industry, but about our banter cooking habits and silly things.
Exactly. And so the array of questions that we've got range from crumpets to Thor's hammer, but just wait and see. First question from Jacob Wright, who says UBP. Hope you're all well. Hope you're well, legends. Well, legends to you as well. Do you think developers, mainly Ubisoft, need to reassess the open world genre? Just completed Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and as much as I enjoyed it, my God, it was huge.
Yes, totally. I 100% think that in this day and age, what we should be looking to do is actually scaling down. The amount of times that we've been sold maps that are just like, it's 100 times bigger than San Andreas. Oh, Just Cause 2, that's a walk in the park compared to what we've got. It's like, yes, mate, that's fantastic. But I could make a big map. I could literally just go like copy, paste, repeat tiles all the way until like infinity. Yeah. But if you don't put anything worthwhile in it, what is the bloody point? Like, I get it. In some cases, having a big map with little to do actually creates atmosphere. Mm. I would argue that Sea of Thieves, Breath of the Wild, and I'm just trying to think of the third example now, and I've really actually that works actually. Mm-hmm. You basically have, it's the landscape itself and the piece of the journey of going there, like from point A to point B. It might take a while, yes, mm-hmm. but at the same time, it's a rewarding experience because you feel like you're crafting a meta narrative within the overarching story. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But if you plonk me into, say, the new Assassin's Creed game and just be like, oh, it's really big. It's like, cool, but the game is focused on action and stealth segments. So mm-hmm. getting from point A to B literally is wasting my time.
Yeah, I've long thought that I would love an Assassin's Creed that went it kind of like how the original one was, where you were mapping out targets and picking specific routes to go in and mm-hmm. get them and hiding amongst the crowd and like, you know, picking your spots. And like, I still remember like a couple of these specific kills from the original one where I hid amongst some people on a bench, or I hid it amongst the crowd and I shivved the lad in his kidneys. And then I was away. I was just disappeared through the crowd again. And I was like, cool, I actually feel like an assassin. And I feel like over the years, they've just went further and further away from that. I've long thought that if they sort of hybridize that original game's approach to assassinations with something like Hitman, where you've got these like level-based, you know, like sprawling sort mm-hmm. of areas and give you a bunch of different ways to take people out. I wonder how much that would clash, I guess, with people who are playing it these days, because Assassin's Creed has become this big open world stodge fest. But
the thing is, you're totally, the stodge, that's the thing that I have the problem with. Like, if
The way
that the gamer UI is designed now, the majority of video games will come with like a map that will have a ton of collectibles or stuff posted on there for you. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it removes any sort of chance of exploration, because you're not actually going to discover that for yourself. You're just going, I'm going there to tick this box.
Go there and hold
Thank
the
you
button.
Very much, Microsoft Excel. That's fantastic fun. So If they remove that, if they actually gave players more agency and trusted them to explore a bit more, you would end up with, because the reason why people raved about Red Dead Redemption 2 wasn't just because of its amazing story, it's because the world felt natural, lived in, and it had tons of secrets hidden in like forgotten cabins that weren't marked in your map. So you would just stumble across them, which made you then go, oh, that's amazing. I'm going to share this with my friends. Mm-hmm. But if it had a marker saying, abandoned cabin, there is a gun here, potentially here. Go here, yeah, one of 15 sort of thing, I would just be like, oh god, I can't be bothered. Like, it drains me to know how little I've done in the game, you know? Yeah. What I mean, when
it starts feeling like a big to-do list for me. I don't know if it's because we're old men, but we've done a lot of this. We've seen the explosion of the open world genre, the old GTAs, like even Ocarina of Time felt huge back in the day. And then you've got all the GTA boom, then Ubisoft's approach to it. And then I feel like Nintendo sort of reined it back in with Breath of the Wild and just said, look, like it is a sizable space, but it's ostensibly one giant level. Like there are lots of different ways to climb through here or experience a 3D space. And I wish more games got back to that, where it's actually a curated space, not just using the speed tree program to just populate, like you said, with a whole ton of trees or whatever. Give me some sort of actual space that is enjoyable to explore and play in, like a genuine play space.
That's why Spider-Man felt very rewarding, because it was based on a real space that many people actually like live there, and obviously they know about that area and they've been there, walked the actual streets themselves. That familiarity bred a desire to go and see what every corner or how the game interpreted their real life into it.
Like a lot of verticality there as well, like in terms of you can't just nip up and around and back down on some dude for a stealth takedown, or you can swing up and give me more verticality in games. I just want to climb 100%. Stuff. Like 100%. Where are those?
What
things?
Happened to that? It was just like it seems that games are just designed on like a lateral plane now. It's just kind of like where is like the giant mountains that I can climb? Where is the like huge features that I will remember looking down the rest of the thing that I've already conquered?
Yeah, that's the thing. I have like a bit of a theory on, like, you think about gaming, this is getting so wide, but you think of gaming history, and it's like you think of the dawn of the 3D space at the end of the 90s, you think of Tomb Raider and how it was like, look, here's this massive, you know, tall space that you're going to climb, you're going to overcome this 3D space. And then Metal Gear Solid came in and said, what about cutscenes, what about cinematics, what about acting and voice acting and pathos? And then Uncharted came in and said, what if we added motion capture to that stuff, what if we just chased Hollywood a bit more? And I would say we totally achieved that, like caught up with Hollywood and did Hollywood level storytelling. And I feel like now is when we're kind of going like, okay, we've done that, now what? Like LA Noir was almost like the peak of it, and then you sort of go back to being like, okay, we sort of abandoned 3D spaces and the value of a 3D space. I think that's why Breath of the Wild was such a big deal.
Yeah.
And you're seeing some games go back into that, like Immortals Fenyx Rising, like Pathless, games that treat their open spaces as a giant level. And I'm just like, that's how it should be. It should be this giant interactive play space, as opposed to this big barren thing that occasionally has a well-directed cutscene in it.
To be honest, going back to the question, it is actually down to the individual developers. Like, it's how they program their games, because we can't just sit here and just whitewash and say that the whole thing is going to be open world games need to be smaller. What the right thing would be is say open worlds need to be designed better.
It's weird, right? Because he mentions Ubisoft, but actually, like, I'll toot my little banter horn so much for Immortals Fenyx Rising. That game is the absolute answer to everything that we think is wrong with Ubisoft, and it came from the Assassin's Creed Odyssey team just making a new IP from the ground up. Now it's very collectible focused. It's very, here's a bunch of icons on the map, but it's done with a genuinely enjoyable set of gameplay mechanics, and it's animated so well. And I think there is a way to do that stuff, but the actual size of the world is more like a Fortnite map. It's way smaller and condensed and actually designed, like you said. It actually feels like someone went in and said, no, there should be enemies here, there should be a climbable thing here and everything else. And that game totally works. Obviously the answer is yes, because we've clearly had so many stodge open world games, games. And we're like hearkening for something else. But yes, next question from an average human. Could a Jedi use
I totally
the Force...
trust that name.
could a Jedi use the Force to move Thor's hammer? No.
Ah, right. Okay. So this is the classic thing of the elevator is worthy, isn't it? Because obviously in Thor Ragnarok, he drops the Mjolnir onto the dragon that's chasing him, and it hits him on the bottom of the face and slams him to the ground. Mm-hmm. Yet two scenes earlier, he's battering Thor around and therefore ignoring the weight of the hammer.
Well, Thor has
by
to
doing
put it
that.
Down. I think whenever Thor's not wielding it, it becomes this sort of ethereally like a gravity well. Like it can't, whatever.
It's like an electromagnet, isn't it? It just goes like down, and when he walks away, it gets switched on.
Because he puts it on someone. I can't remember that now, but it's in one of the other scenes in the MCU. MCU yeah. where he just puts it on someone's chest and they can't get up. I mean, I know like Hulk can't pick it up in the First Avengers and things like
but,
that.
But that also implies something else that's interesting. It's not that the hammer is technically always heavy either, because when he places it on that person, it doesn't like crush them into oblivion, nor the dragon. Like, it, yes, it was weighed down, but it wasn't like...
It's not trying to go through the planet, like to go somewhere else.
Yeah. So it has its limitations. And at the end of the day, well, you could probably just explain this by just saying it's comic books and it's probably a manifestation. Actually, this is where it probably comes from.
I totally have an explanation for this, yeah.
In the films, they state that Mjolnir is an extension of Thor's power, isn't it?
It's his worthiness.
It's his worthiness. So therefore, it's in tune with his emotions and feelings, and basically he has an influence over it that he's not, like, psychically, I imagine, or magically. So therefore, like he probably designed it, probably does whatever he needs it to do at the time. And well, that's probably the best way.
That Odin says in the first Thor about whoever shall prove themselves worthy shall inherit the power of Thor. So it's like, I think that's the exact quote. I could be totally wrong.
Yeah.
But it's definitely about worthiness. So it's like, if a Jedi was worthy enough, then sure. Because Cap managed to eventually wield it in
Infinity War.
In Endgame. When he was proved worthy enough. But that's it. And obviously in the new Thor, Thor Love and Thunder, we're going to get the Jane Foster is going to wield it because she'll be worthy enough, depending on how they're going to spin that story. So yeah, if a Jedi was worthy enough, then I guess so. But it takes an absolute ton of, like, I don't know, ground to be covered before you're worthy enough. And Cap had to go through everything Cap did before Mjolnir would, like, come to him. So I guess actually the answer would be yes, but you'd really have to prove yourself. It would take a long time.
I think that there might be a technicality to get around it as well, because if the Jedi was powerful enough, it could rip the chunk of Earth that it's embedded in up and
just
out.
Hold it
like
up.
Technically, they didn't say whether or not the Jedi could wield Mjolnir, lift it up. So technically, just it would count it. As lifting, because it would be lifting the entire Earth around it. But
that's But I mean, when you opened this and you said if Mjolnir was in an elevator and the elevator went up, then that elevator is worthy.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, if they moved a clump of dirt or the entire sort of island of dirt around it, then even like the most mad lad Sith could totally do it.
But potentially,
ultimately, yes is the answer to that, even though I said no first. I've talked myself out of it, but as you do. Next question from Steve Ahrens. He always misses the UBP because of the Aussie time zone. But thanks for listening anyway. Thank you very much for checking in with us. He says, do you guys think we'll get a Link to the Past or Ocarina of Time remaster for Zelda's 35th anniversary? Also, hot crumpet suggestion, try crunchy peanut butter and a touch of honey.
Oh,
what a combo.
You are a man after my own heart. That is peanut butter on anything. Yes, please, mate. But that dash of honey as well. I mean, if I can substitute it for a bit of agave syrup or some maple syrup, mate, I can't have honey, can I? Vegan. Like, it's dumb, but that's what we do.
I know that makes perfect sense. I just didn't, if in my mind, bees were not valid, like, soul-having creatures. I just sort of think of them as,
you,
like,
you look a bee in the eye and you tell it that.
So you're full-on beeist at this point. But I think, I just can't, yeah, I mean, yeah,
imagine
sure, yeah,
that makes perfect sense. The new UBP merch. It's like Scott Telford, racist against bees.
No bees allowed in this UK.
Yeah, not in my hive.
Get all those little bee bouncers. Speaking of bees, I love all those bee facts about, like, bees love a drink. Like, bees will drink, like, pure ethanol.
Oh, yeah.
Little bee bouncers that, like, stay on the side of the hive and won't let them back in if they're too drunk. I got all of this from Ricky Gervais. It might not be true, but I think it is. I like the idea of a bunch of drunk bees. Anyway, Zelda's 35th anniversary is this year. Nintendo are yet to do anything for it. So what do you
think? I think that they will, but it will be a timed exclusive, the Mario. Like, you can't see this, but Scott has just put his face in his hands because of how much we've talked about how stupid a decision that was to be like, hey, guys, here's a thing that is really cool and interesting. We're doing something really new with a really beloved IP. And everyone's like, that sounds great.
For a month.
But it's only going to be available for a short time. Nintendo? Why do you hate
that? It makes perfect business sense as an isolated statement. It's horrible to consumers. But there is also, because they did this with the mini NES, with the mini SNES as well. Yeah. And they let them go on sale for a bit and then they pull them back. And even when they are on sale, it's limited numbers because they want to drive up the sales and the prices and everything else. It's horrible. It does make the most business sense for them. But also this year, they're juggling Zelda's 35th anniversary with Metroid's 35th anniversary. And I think Donkey Kong's as well. So it's like, there is a lot of stuff to sort of like try and juggle. And the answer to that is not make one of them available each other month and rotate them through. You could easily just do everything at once. But I also wonder how they're approaching paying the respects to each thing, because all those games are going to line up later on this year.
I think that if they're going to try and tackle all three of those big IPs together, unless they do something like a Triforce pack, which literally is like three great hits, like all like in one thing, but then is favored towards Legend of Zelda that way, it probably would be smart for them to do DLC for their other IPs that are doing really well. Like if they manage to do
like a Breath of the Wild type thing.
Yeah, just having crossover in their games would be nice. Like, even if they got some stuff for Smash, because Smash is so unrelentingly popular. Like,
yeah. I mean, later this year, they've got... Well, that's the thing. Breath of the Wild 2 was initially sort of penciled in for this year. And then Link's Awakening, I think, was last year. Maybe the year before. Yeah, whatever. There tends to be something Zelda-based every couple of years. So it's like, we're right on the cusp of Breath of the Wild 2. So I wonder if they'll do like a big blowout and just say, hey, Ocarina of Time HD, we've touched up the 3DS version. And then put like Wind Waker HD, put that on Switch. I guess do like Twilight Princess and stuff. And then have a teaser for Breath of the Wild 2 or maybe a confirmed release date or something. But yeah, you'd have to imagine they'll do something for it. But at the same time, Mario's 35th anniversary was very little. It was just like a collection of those games. In worse versions of them, to be honest, as far as I'm concerned.
So unless they just do a collection for each of them, I don't know.
Like... Maybe. Next question from Grin, aka Bubel, apparently. Which Ape Escape 2 minigame is the best, and why is it Monkey Soccer?
Oh man, I'm going to get confused. But isn't Monkey Boxing part of the Ape Escape 2?
I'm
googling now.
Okay, I've played a lot of Ape Escape 2 on PS5, which is as a PSA or an FYI to the world. Ape Escape 2 is one of the most broken games on PS5. I think I talked about it earlier. But I'm still trying to play it because I love the mechanics so much. I even bought Ape Escape on my Vita just so I could play a workable Ape Escape. But then I remembered that it's the original PSP version and it doesn't even recognize the right analog stick. So you're just pushing a button to net monkeys. I want to flick the stick, mate.
Okay, so we've got three mini games from Ape Escape 2, right?
Okay.
We've got Dance Monkey Dance, which is a mini game that is about, you can play it alone or with a friend, and you control a monkey dancing to a rhythm. You choose a track and then you choose a song on the track, and then you beat each song to unlock the next. And when all the songs on track are beaten, the next track is unlocked.
I've not even unlocked any of these yet.
And you've got to clear the ninja hideout in order to unlock that. Then you've got Monkey Soccer, which is very, very fun. I remember playing this and actually having a blast because you get to recruit your... they've got like tons of different teammates and stuff like that you can have in it as well. And there's special balls as well that are like spiky and bomb balls and stuff like that. Absolutely amazing. Yeah. Special balls. And then you've got Monkey Climber, which is the monkey climbs on ropes produced by eggplant bees. Oh, they're back in the bees.
This sounds like what's in Astrobot thing, Astro's Playroom, you're just like doing the climbing thing with the motion controls.
And all you've got to do is control a monkey whose goal it is to climb around and collect 5 bananas before the time runs out.
I'm not going to lie, Dance Monkey Dance sounds pretty good, but maybe it is Monkey Soccer.
There's 5 levels of difficulty, right, on the on this last mini game, the Monkey Climber. The most difficult is called Psycho, and the easiest is called Neanderthal.
I mean, okay, so have you played these in the past? Because I haven't got to these yet.
I have played them in the past, but it was a long, long time ago. I'm actually looking for what other mini games there are, because I believe that there is a better one.
You believe in Monkey Boxing. It's in you somewhere. Yeah,
mini games Ape Escape. Monkey Boxing sounds like... It's one of those
as a wider thing, right? Do you remember when Ape Escape first was a thing? Like, Ape Escape was the first game I bought twice because I got it when I was a kid. I was blown away by it, and then I sold it. And then I grew up and I saw a picture of it, and I was like, "Oh my god, I remember being great!" Like all the dual analog sticks, rowing that little boat that you could row with dual analog sticks. I need to play this again. So I bought it back, and I remember my mum just being like, "What are you doing? You're buying this thing that's clearly for 5-year-olds," and I was like a teenager at this point. But it was amazing, dual skill. I loved it.
Okay, I finally have the answer. This is the official line. You, my friend, who posed us this question, saying that the Super Monkey Soccer was the best one.
Yes.
You're wrong. And I hate to be the one to break it to you, because it feels too personal.
Okay.
But you're wrong, because Ape Escape 3 has the best one, because it does indeed have the monkey boxing. And not only does it have a fantastic name, which is called Ultim Ape Fighter, but it also has the Metal Gear Solid one. It's the Metal
Gear
one.
That's
in that one there. So good, why Lord. Would we say anything else? Because that Solid is amazing.
The question was which Ape Escape 2 minigame is the best.
I know,
the
but
3
that's
wasn't on the table.
Okay, I mean, out of the three that's given there, the monkey football one is definitely the best. But if we go for the overall, like, what is the best one from all of the franchise, it's got to be Metal Gear Solid. In fact, I'm going to try and convince our boss to let me do all of the the Ape Escape minigames ranked worst to best.
Well, I was just thinking we should do the best football minigames.
He won't do it. He won't let us do it, mate. He won't let us do it.
I mean, soccer is obviously way more of like an English, that way around the world thing other than America thing. But if we did all the best football minigames, Rayman's Kung Foot Soccer needs to be in there as well.
The Mega Man Battle Soccer one. For the SNES. Oh, it was sick, dude. It was really broken. Like, really broken. If you use certain, like, Robot Masters, you would just have, like, an unbeatable team. Right. Technically, we could count Blitzball as part of that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah. Totally.
Because it's a five-a-side, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think it's 3-on-3. It's been a long time since.
No, it feels like 3-on-3 because all you ever remember is just swimming to the goal and just being like, Jack shot two, in you get.
Yeah, just sort of hoping for the best. Plus 10 on my goalkeeper, managed to save it again. But best ball games, best ball mini games. Maybe we'll revisit that in the future.
I tell you what, use the hashtag, #UBP, UBP, UBP.
Yes.
And send us your favorite football/soccer mini games from other video games.
Ball based, really, I'm thinking.
Yeah, just send us ball based, like Cooler World. Or Mojo.
Maybe that Overwatch one, but I call it Lucio's weird ball game thing that was like their version of Rocket League. But I didn't know if it was good or not. It just looks a bit weird.
Rocket League has to be on there.
Rocket League's totally on there. Even the new Rocket League mobile game would probably be on there. They're doing like a weird side version of it. Yeah, you sort of like fight sideways.
That's actually pretty cool.
I love Rocket League so much that I'll give it a shot. But I also played the Crash Bandicoot mobile game last night, and then I just hated myself. What is that? I mean, it's made by King, like obviously the Crash, what do you call it? Crush Candy Crush thing.
It
made me wince a bit, because the first crate that you break open is one of the ones that you would usually jump on in a regular Crash, where you bounce on it five times and they just have you spin through it. And I'm like, you don't even understand the Crash.
They don't care. They just don't care about it, mate. That's your childhood, and they're wiping their bum with it.
They really are. It's a horrible time. Next question from Robert Morrison. Have you ever squeezed your way literally or figuratively through a thing too narrow to turn around in? Like, say, a big boat in a canal. This one time I...
sorry. What was the name of the person who wrote this again?
Robert Morrison.
Big up Rob. Big Rob here is trying to disguise the fact that he is a boat.
Have you, are you not keeping up with the news? Have you not seen the old Suez Canal being blocked?
The cruise ship from Pokemon getting blocked?
Yeah, apparently causing the world so many billions of dollars because they all use that one shipping lane to get through. But yeah, he says, this one time I Shawshanked my way through an underground concrete pipe barely wider than my shoulders. Still terrifies me now.
Big Rob, why do you give us this information and then do not actually tell us about it? Because it's just like, that's like saying, people are like sitting around having a pie, having a drink, and one of them's still like, my mate Tony, he's a bit mad, isn't he? And he's just got like, stabbed a guy the other night. and then just has a sip of his Red Bull, and then everyone just goes quiet. So, sorry, mate, you're going to have to expand on that. Like, you can't just leave that hanging.
This thing reminds me of, you know, those old US, not necessarily US, it was like Green Beret adverts that were on in front of movies, where it showed a guy going through like an underwater, tiny.
Hated that. Gave me claustrophobia.
Same.
Hated it.
And like his like clothes get stuck on like a little hook, and it's like, oh, is he going to get out? And I think he does get out, and then it says like, oh, Green Berets, it just takes a certain type of person. I'm never going to be that person. I don't want to be anywhere near that person. It's just, oh, yeah, the training for that person.
The closest thing that I can come to is, actually, I've got two stories, two mini stories for you now. Okay. It's story time with Jules Gill. Yeah, indeed. The first one is I went to university in Exeter in the UK, and that's where J.K. Rowling came up with all of the ideas for Harry Potter.
Okay.
Because she went there and basically it was based on her time there. Mm-hmm. And you know that Diagon Alley, that really weird street?
My Potter knowledge is nothing, but yes, I do.
Yeah, like that. She based that on a tiny, tiny street that's actually between two big buildings, and you can only go down in single file. And it is actually like you do have to turn sideways if you get to the middle bit, because the way that the city was structured, it's like there's just a gap between the buildings. Mm-hmm. Somebody said, yep, this is now a road. It's created some, like, it was really weird at a time. Like in the summer when the city was really busy, you'd actually have to like look down the road to see if anyone was coming the other side. And there would actually even be like awkward discussions of like, no, I started walking first, so back the hell up sort of thing. So yeah, I got stuck there once because me and my friends went down there, and we got stuck. A friend was in front of me, another person was behind me, and we bumped into another group trying to get through, and they were arguing, just being like, just let's move. And I'm in the middle, just going like, I hate this. I really hate the community.
Like doing a gig. And then being sandwiched in.
The second time, it was a bit different and a bit more life-threatening. I used to go surfing at this place called Porthcawl, and there's a little... how best to describe it? To get behind the waves, you've got to swim out and go kind of like around this big peninsula style thing. And at certain times of the day, the sea level is so low that you can actually walk out to that little island, rock island sort of thing.
Okay.
And it's got a gap between it and another huge, very, very jagged slate reef, which is not fun. And you're always told to stay away from it. Unfortunately, I ended up towards that on one of my surfing things. So I was like, okay, I could see the slate reef. I'm going to just try and like crest over to it and put my feet onto it and just like wait until the next wave and then just get the hell out of Dodge. Yeah. But unfortunately, I slipped down into the crack and the wave went out fully and exposed the rock. It was just like the bedding that was there. Mm-hmm. And I had to stand on it and time it right and wait for the wave to come through the alleyway.
That's
so
all
I
your crash bandicoot training.
Well,
your
that's the thing. I was really, I was genuinely terrified because of the fact that if I timed that wrong, I would have been slammed against the wall. Uh-huh. And if I'd waited too long, I would have been lifted up into the wall as well. So I had to basically run at the same as I saw it come around the corner and jump so that it would catch me underneath and carry me back out. It was horrifying.
I imagine that Zack Snyder style. You jump and you're like,
and then it exploded behind me.
Yeah, and it's just everything's in super slow motion. But I'm glad you made it out. No cracked eggs for you.
Oh, I hated it, mate. Hated it. Awful.
That sounds like a hell of a thing. Not a gaming question whatsoever, but Untitled Banter Podcast, bring them all on. He also put a hashtag saying, dinner be fiat. So I don't know what that is, but I'm guessing that's Scottish. But don't be scared, maybe. Don't know. Translate it. We'll find out next week. Next question from Haley Streams from Quarantines. What's an objectively bad game that you love anyway? They always loved A Dog's Life for PS2 as a kid, even though it's a garbage
trash,
game.
Pal. That is a garbage, that game.
Dog's Life
love
was
it,
fun.
Though.
I'll totally say that.
It's, no, to be fair, though, like it's one of those things where I'm a huge fan of finding 4 to 5 out of 10 games that you know you love. Like for me, Fighting Force on the PS1. Absolutely love that game. I played
I love
it over
a good,
and
like
over.
You said, 5, 6 out of 10 game. I really want to do on the site, I think we've mentioned this before, but I really want to do the best 6 out of 10 games ever, because I feel like everyone knows what that is, but it's not like a term almost.
Yeah.
But like there are so many great 6 out of 10 games. Like, I've always said Bugs and Taz Time Busters is like my ultimate one on the PS1.
I thought that was brilliant.
Too. I mean, like the solo Bugs game was worse, but I always remember thinking that the Bugs and Taz one was a great co-op game. I'm sure it's aged like hell, but I remember liking it when I was a kid.
Yeah. There is actually a really, really bad video game. I'm just checking the name of it. Mm-hmm. I think it's called is this what it's called? Yeah, it is. Right. Have you heard of a video game on the PlayStation 1 called The Unholy War?
Yes. Oh my, that's a great game. That's a brilliant game.
But when you go back and look at it now, it is utter cack.
It is like that weird floating shark thing that remember thinking it was.
You could play as a rhino.
It was like a brawler. You like one on one. I think
the best way to describe it is Power Stone meets Smash Brothers.
Yes. Yeah. Like an early Smash Brothers, but like with a different sort of camera angle. But young me thought that was the coolest thing ever. Like I just thought the creature designs were great, and it's almost like a kaiju battle almost. It's a thing.
There's actually one more entry that we should definitely include. Have you ever played the beat-em-up game called Psychic Force?
No, but I have heard of it. Was it a good time?
It was the best time. I will try and sell this to you now. I'm going to put myself onto like a 30-second timer. I'm going to give you the elevator pitch for it.
Bring it.
It's a fighting game, 3D. You're trapped inside a cube. Everyone's got psychic powers that are based on different elements. The main bad guy is called Keith.
This is okay. You've mentioned this before because you've told
yes, I have
before, but I didn't know that was from Psychic Force. I just had to Google to look at some artwork for it. There was another anime style beat 'em up game that was on PS1, and I never remember its name. And it was like there was a red ninja in it with like a blue jewel in his head, and there was a woman that had like a pink top and she had really oversized boobs, and they were in the opening animation. And it was all really over the top and anime-ish, and I don't remember much else about it. There was like a guy that could like conjure portals. He was like a Brian Fury style dude. And he had like a mark on his chest, I think. Someone out there will know what this is, and I'll try and describe. I'll try and find what it is before next week.
I don't know that one.
When I'm looking at Psychic Force, it's reminding me of this other thing.
Okay, we've got to find that game.
Yeah,
help I can't Scott put it find down. His mystery game.
But it was a cool thing, and that was a PS1 beat 'em up as well. But yeah, objectively bad game that we love anyway. I've stuck through Pokemon Go for the last 6 years. I love it. I mean, it's great now. I think it's legitimately one of the best Pokemon games of all time now. But it definitely went through a weird downswing when they removed all the radar stuff out of it, and you were just swiping, collecting Magikarps for like a year. But what's your objectively bad game that you love anyway? Psychic Force.
I guess it is actually Psychic Force because it's not good by any stretch of the imagination. Do you know what? I've got a soft spot for Gekido as well. That was on PS1. It was like another
Days
sort
of the
like,
Blade. Was that something?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what it was. But the only thing that was the most memorable about it was that it had a sample from the from a Slipknot soundtrack.
Ooh.
You know, the bit was like it's the one that starts with. It just had that for ages and ages, and you're like, yeah.
I don't see that live. And dude, I think it's Jim Root plays that, and he just stood there doing that in front of the stage for like 20 minutes. I was like, are you going to do the song, or is it just going to be like that's just that for as long, just like a weird tape recorder that's stuck. It was a good time. Final question from Coach Marv, regular Coach Marv. Hello, Coach
I love
Marv.
Him.
Thank you very much. He says, if you met someone for the first time and had to give them 3 music albums and 2 video games, or vice versa, to give them an idea of who you are as a person, what would you choose and why? This is very
bloody
hard.
Hell, that is a tough one. That's kind of like your Desert Island Discs,
a little
isn't
bit.
It? Because it's like, what would you? Okay, so to tell
you, gotta go off gut feeling. We'll try and keep it snappy. I can do something off the top of my head.
Yeah, go on. You go first while I formulate my plan.
I think if it's 3, okay, so 3 music albums, 2 video games. The music albums, one of them would be Alter Bridge. I would give someone Blackbird by Alter Bridge. I would then give them a synthwave album. I'd give them Trilogy by Carpenter Brut. And then I'd need something that is a little bit more video gamey. And maybe, I don't know, some sort of score. I was going to say the Halo 2 soundtrack, but that's only because it brings me so much
big
joy.
Boy.
That Molnir mix, speaking of Molnir early on, the Molnir mix of that music that's on there, and In Amber Clad is another great song. I'm just stuff from the Halo 2 soundtrack. I think it would be those two. And then the 2 video games, I think it would be Metal Gear Solid on the PlayStation 1.
Yeah.
Not Twin Snakes. And then something probably Rocket League or something that I go back to all the time.
Nice.
No, Mortal Kombat 11. It would be Metal Gear Solid and Mortal Kombat 11 because MK11 has completely replaced Rocket League as my casual game of choice. But what would your albums and games be?
So my albums are actually very tough to try and define what I am. So I would say if I had to go just on pure gut feeling, I would give somebody something that's kind of like heavy, but also has electronica in it. So I probably swing towards the Prodigy, maybe.
Sharp.
I would give, just because of the fact that it's like a universally appreciated band. But
Which
I wouldn't be. Well, that's the thing.
That's
I would probably give them. I'm just loading up to the one that my dad gave me on the cassette tape. I think it was Fat of the Land. Fat of the Land is the one that I'd give everyone because I just think that it's timeless. It's just ridiculously good tunes over and over and over, then I would probably, you know what, actually, I'm going to change my answer to that. As much as I love The Prodigy, I feel like there's a band that exemplifies the simplistic brutality of electronica, and that's Rammstein.
Oh,
I'd give them like Du Hast or something like that.
Like, just, I was going to say, which Rammstein album?
It's a tough question, but that was just out of my gut feeling. I've got to go for the first one that I ever listened to. Then I probably slip over a Death Grips. I'd probably give The Money Store, which is just a fantastically brutal, crazy album.
I stayed away from the screamy stuff, but I would totally have something like the While She Sleeps, the You Are We album, I didn't say The New Architects, but I guess it would be something older for them, but some sort of screamy-based thing, some sort of metalcore scream thing.
And then I'd probably round out the pack by giving somebody like Cancer Bats, but I'm just struggling. Like, it's either Hail Destroy. Well, Hail Destroy is great, but only because of the fact that it's simplistic brutality. But Bears Mayers Bone Scraps is very good.
What's the one that's got Old Blood on it? It's the one from
Dead Set on Living.
Yeah, Dead Set on Living. I think it's because that was so sick live. Like, Old Blood live was unreal. Like, I don't even know what the average populace's thoughts towards screamy music is, but if you can stand it, Old Blood is unreal.
It's great.
Yeah.
He's got such an interesting voice as well, because he can bust out these nice low guttural like groans, but he has such a high register for the rest of the stuff that it's like, sort of thing. Like that is like, it takes a bit of getting used to, but my God, when it grabs you, it does.
I remember meeting Cormier after one of the gigs, and he was just shattered. He was just soaked. I was like, I love you. Look,
he gives his everything to it. Especially remember when he used to have the massive side hawk. It was just like, it was like down to his like waist, but it was only just one side. It's crazy.
He was like 10 years ahead of where most people would start getting side hawks. Like, a Hawkeye got his in Infinity War or whatever, or in Endgame. But so those are your three music albums. What are your two games?
It would have to be Bioshock, because I think that it's just fantastic. I love that game. And probably Command and Conquer Red Alert.
Ooh, these are very, very, very good picks.
Just because of the fact that, actually, no, XCOM. XCOM.
Oh!
Like, it's got to be XCOM. Just because of the amount of stress and love that I've given to that game. Like, it's, fantastic.
XCOM is an absolute delight. I still need to play the War of the Chosen stuff. I just don't trust the consoles to play it well enough.
Hands down, I swear to Christ, to Slime Jesus, that it is the best expansion that I've ever played for a game. It offers so much. It's so good.
I love the idea of it. I love the idea of injecting story in, and like having almost like a Shadow of Mordor style, like faction
nemesis
system you're trying to sort of chase down and stuff. Anything XCOM is just cool. And that's a really great question. Thank you very much, Coach Marv. And thanks very much to everybody else. That is a ton more. We'll try and get to next week. But thanks to everybody for sending stuff in.
How many did we do? Was that five? Five questions?
We got through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven questions.
Hey.
Seven entire questions. I want to get through more of them. I want to do more quickfire type stuff. But that's really good, and they're worth diving into a bit more, especially the one at the beginning about open world stuff. So yes, thanks to everybody for sending in their questions. This has been another Untitled Banter podcast. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much.
And we'll catch you all next week.
UBP. Bye-bye. UBP. UBP. UBP.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.